This is Brian Cheffins. These are lectures for the LLM course on corporate governance, focusing on the first major theme in the course, which is an overview of corporate governance matters. In this lecture, I'm going to discuss agency costs. For a number of decades after Adolph Burley and Gardner Means popularized the notion of a separation of ownership and control, the structure of ownership and control in widely held companies was thought of as being highly problematic. In particular, concerns were expressed about shareholder passivity because this created the potential for management to be unaccountable to anyone. However, a separation of ownership and control can in fact be a sensible division of labor in a publicly traded company. One advantage is that a company which has diffuse share ownership has a presumptive financial edge. This is because amassing large amounts of equity capital should be easier to do when shares can be readily bought and sold by a wide range of investors than it will be when recourse must be had to a handful of wealthy individuals. A company characterized by an outsider arm's length system of ownership and control can also benefit from a managerial quality perspective. In companies where ownership and control are separated, executives can be hired purely on the basis of their managerial aptitude and credentials rather than by reference to their ability to finance the firm or family connections with dominant shareholders. Certainly, with a widely held company, it makes sense for executives to manage the company rather than the shareholders collectively. The senior management team should constitute a sufficiently small and cohesive body to allow for effective decision-making and should have ample opportunity to become familiar with the operations of the company on behalf of which they act. In contrast, shareholders in a widely held public company typically will be ill-equipped to take a hands-on role. Publicly quoted companies typically have a large number of shareholders. Among the largest 100 publicly quoted companies in the UK, the number of shareholders averages approximately 300,000. With share registers of this nature, it is unrealistic to put day-to-day managerial decisions in the hands of the shareholders. Also important is that shareholders will rarely have experience as corporate executives. Shareholders correspondingly cannot readily substitute for the management team of a publicly traded firm. Moreover, since investors own shares in a sizable number of companies to achieve diversification, those with managerial talent and expertise are unlikely to have the time to become sufficiently well acquainted with a particular company to offer constructive solutions on questions executives have to confront. Such challenging issues could be how to finance the expansion of the business, deciding which new products to launch, or determining which divisions of the business to expand or to spin off. While delegation of decision-making to an inner circle of executives offers advantages for the widely held public company, the arrangement has potential faults. Senior executives of large UK public companies typically own only a small percentage of the shares, rarely much more than 10% collectively, and this figure tends to decline over time when the management team includes the founders of the company. Available data indicates that with companies in the FTSE 100, a stock market, which is the stock market index that encompasses the largest companies traded on the London Stock Exchange, CEOs own on average shares in their companies that are worth about £2.5 million. The equivalent figure for other senior executives is under £1 million. Now, these figures might sound large. However, they are trivial when matched up against the average overall market capitalization among FTSE 100 companies. This averages in the neighborhood of £15 billion. Correspondingly, top executives receive only a tiny fraction of the returns derived from the profit-enhancing activities they engage in on behalf of shareholders. With executives, in essence, seeking to foster corporate success for the benefit of others, they may be tempted to use their control over corporate assets to further their own interests at the expense of those who own equity. A way of describing this is to say that public companies are potentially subject to managerial rent extraction. Economists use the term rents to refer to extra returns individuals obtain due to their positional advantages. Hence, to the extent that senior executives use the power available to them to exploit corporate assets to their own advantage, they can be said to extract rents from their companies. There has long been awareness of the dangers involved with the managerial arrangements in widely held companies. Herbert Spencer, a noted philosopher and political economist, said of mid-19th century railways, proprietors, meaning shareholders in this context, instead of constantly exercising their franchise, allow it to become on all ordinary occasions a dead letter. Retiring directors are so habitually re-elected without opposition and have so great a power of ensuring their own re-election without opposition and have so great a power of ensuring their own re-election when opposed that the board becomes practically a closed body. And it is only when the misgovernment grows extreme enough to produce a revolutionary agitation among the shareholders that any change can be effected. While it has been well known for decades that there can be potential detrimental effects when managers run companies in which they have tiny equity stakes, the nomenclature now most often used to describe the situation is reasonably new. As the 20th century drew to a close, economists began describing the dangers associated with the delegation of managerial authority to executives as agency costs. What is referred to as agency theory is indeed now the dominant economic theory in the field of corporate governance. The agency cost concept has gained influence outside the academic realm and is now well accepted in debates about corporate governance reform. This is illustrated by the 2009 report by Sir David Walker that he issued on corporate governance in UK banks. One topic Walker considered was the role institutional shareholders play with respect to corporate governance. In framing his analysis, he said shareholders, at least those who invest for the long haul, are confronted with the agency problem. This stems from the gap between owner, the shareholder, and manager, the board, and the potential for misalignment of interest between them. The size of this gap is a measure of potential imperfection in a relatively free market capitalist system, which will generally succeed best where the alignment of interest between owner and manager is as close as possible. The managerial rent extraction that generates agency costs can occur in a variety of ways in a widely held firm. Executives, for instance, can shirk their responsibilities by carrying out more desirable activities at the expense of taking time to run the company, perhaps playing golf or setting up business ventures they want to pursue in their personal capacity. Alternatively, they may simply play it safe to retain the power and influence they have built up, thus creating a vacuum of ambition. More egregiously, public company executives might engage in looting. In the present context, this means improper diversion of corporate assets. Examples can include constructing unnecessarily lavish offices, carrying out exotic business travel, providing high-paying jobs to family members, and squandering funds on ill-conceived pet projects. Moreover, senior executives might seek to use their influence in the boardroom to ensure that the board awards them unduly generous salaries and excessive bonuses. In addition, a corporation's managers might use the leverage they have to entrench themselves and continue in office even after they're no longer competent or qualified to run the business. The economic theory of agency costs must be distinguished from the legal version of agency. Under agency law, a person, the principal, engages another person, the agent, to perform services on the principal's behalf and delegates some decision-making authority to the agent. Under UK company law, as the automatic self-cleansing filter syndicate company and Cunningham case indicates, a company's directors are not agents for the shareholders. This is because directors act on behalf of the company, not the shareholders. On the other hand, from an economic perspective, self-serving managerial conduct will impose agency costs on shareholders. Shareholders, as principals, depend functionally on management as agents to operate the business profitably and effectively. Left at this, the prognosis for corporate governance in widely held companies would be pretty dismal. In a nutshell, the interests of executives diverge from those of the shareholders who aren't well positioned to take a hands-on role. With managers being empowered to run companies, they would seem to have a license to pursue their chosen agenda. One correspondingly would anticipate that the market standing of widely held companies would be pretty dismal. Instead, as mentioned, in the UK, large business enterprises typically have diffuse share ownership. Moreover, widely held companies do not appear to suffer competitively as a result of the agency cost problem. Instead, empirical studies on the relationship between ownership structure and corporate performance have failed to establish that diffuse share ownership imposes any sort of handicap on corporate profitability. One reason that the agency cost problem does not put the widely held company at a marked disadvantage is that corporate governance will often be less than ideal in companies with large block holders. The primary danger is that the dominant shareholders, likely in collusion with management, will cheat others who own equity in the company and secure what are known as private benefits of control. The Financial Times correspondingly described in 2011 the result of a recent influx of overseas-based mining companies to the UK in the following terms. It has led to the creation of a class of companies where a tiny number of powerful shareholders could, in theory, ride roughshod over the rights of minority shareholders. There are several ways in which dominant shareholders might seek to exploit their position. These are summarized in my 2013 article on companies with major block holders listing on the London Stock Exchange. One possibility I mentioned there is that a dominant shareholder might engineer sweetheart-related party transactions with affiliated corporations in order to siphon off a disproportionate share of the public company's earnings. Minority shareholders can also be prejudiced if a publicly traded company is dominated by an entrepreneur who, motivated by vanity, sentiment, or loyalty, continues to run the business after he or she is no longer well suited to do so. Alternatively, they may step down but hand managerial control to family members who lack the skills or the drive required to run a major business enterprise. The television series Succession captures this dynamic very effectively, with father Logan Roy holding on to control of his publicly traded media empire due to doubts regarding the capabilities of his children as successors.